The Muskie 360 Podcast is brought to you by Yeti, built for the wild, Evinrude E-Tech Outboards, Joe Bucher Outdoors, the number one name in Big Fish products, and The Muskie Shop.
All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 Podcast. I've got my essentially co-host at this point, Chaz Martin. How you doing, bro?
Steven, I am healthy and doing well, man. And I'm as always, just happier than ever to be here on the show with you. Been looking forward to it. And I'm hunkered down. I don't know about you, but
I rally around your family with a pocket full of shells. I think that was Rage Against the Machine.
But, right? Yeah. I mean, I haven't left the house in a day, which is really weird for me. And I've been, you know, just banging out vlogs and editing, which is awesome. I've obviously been doing my e-learning. So the other half of my day has been kind of grading assignments and messaging students, which is fine. You know, we got to do what we got to do to keep our education system alive with all this, pandemic crisis going on.
I mean, crazy.
It's just, it is crazy.
It's crazy.
My parents are, you know, my dad's, you know, he's in his 60s. Nobody's seen anything like this.
No, but there's not there's no playbook, you know. It's just like, I was telling you before we started about, you know, this is a busy time for me, and a lot of people can't travel right now. You know, I've got a client that was supposed to be here from Toronto. They can't make it. I mean, I had a super surreal morning today. I got up at sunrise.
Tell me about it, man.
Well, I got up at sunrise. And I drove over to the lake, and I passed two cars. And I'm driving down the road, and I was like, it felt weird because it was like one of these things, like, should I be doing this?
Dude, and we're like in like the Stephen King movie right now.
It is. And I go out on the lake, and it's just like, I caught a fish, and not to say that there was just no joy in it. You know,
because you're like, you're in the back of your mind, you're wondering, should I be doing this right now? Should I be out here? Am I the idiot that's out right
now? It's like a 42, and I didn't even take a picture. I was just like, later, dude. I just sort of rolled him out, and I was like, whatever, moving on.
It's a great fish, but that's a testament to the unrest in even guys like us and gals out there, the muskie anglers of the world. You know, it's like we're probably some of the most, you know, go with the flow folks around.
Oh yeah.
You know, give or take. And it's like when everybody's feeling this way, like you said, I've had customers emailing me and texting me about like June and July dates. I'm like, oh, I don't want to lose my whole guide business over this.
The one thing I'm going to say is this, and I thought about that. I told you beforehand, I was out mowing my yard. I just had to go and do something stupid, you know, and just out there. And I was thinking about it, and something we need to say on the podcast is muskie fishing is not that important. It's not. And as far as like what's important in your life, but
absolutely, and
take care of that first. But what I'm going to say is this: these people that you've enjoyed what they've done, whether they're professional anglers, whether they're bait makers, whether they're stores, whether they're brands, this is going to hurt everybody in the muskie business, period.
It really will.
And if you can support them and you don't have to change, and hopefully, I hope to goodness on God on high that in 7 days, what I'm saying doesn't matter. But
what I was going to say is that
a person like you, a person like myself, a person like Joe, a person like Lee Touchin from Today's Angler, a person like Doug Wagner, a person, I don't even know these guys, but like Smitty Bates, a person like small manufacturers, because essentially the muskie world is tiny, and it's not a bunch of guys that are getting rich, and it's not a bunch of guys that have a bunch of money. It's a tiny little niche sport. So once you've taken care of your stuff and you've taken care of your household, if you can afford to keep doing what you're doing, buy an extra bait or something like that, and try to help some of these guys, because it's going to crunch.
Absolutely,
especially supply chain, you know, is messed up for a lot of guys on goods, and we are the last industry anyone is going to think of caring about. You know, it's just like,
I have to say, so let me think, you know, another optimistic thing though, if I could bring, I am also kind of known on the sides of the eternal optimist,
right,
which you kind of have to be. It's a crazy musky fisherman.
Oh, yeah, keep so going.
Bazillion times. I know, right? Yeah. Like, people are like, are you crazy?
This You're is
like,
fine.
Yeah, I am crazy, just so you know, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there is, you know, in the craziest of times, like, you know, you do kind of daydream about like the beautiful scene ahead, like the recovery and being able to get out of the water.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like, so is bad as it is, I'm sure everybody is getting, you know, cabin fever times five now or times 10.
Yeah.
You know, we're all just looking forward to life going back to normal.
And we'll shut up about the gloom and doom and the weirdness shortly. But I would say is this, I've always been the consummate investor. And if you're worried about your bottom line and stuff like that, I think this is going to be a V-shaped recovery anyway. You know,
yeah,
whatever.
Darn right, man. I love that.
Whatever.
Yeah, it's coming right back.
It's coming right back. And I'll tell you right now, for anybody in the musky game, don't buy Chinese baits anymore. Period. Don't buy that bullshit. Don't bring that bullshit on my boat.
Oh,
don't
my
bring
God.
It to the musky show. Don't send your molds to China. Don't buy your hooks from China. Stop giving your extra money to this bullshit on anything you can. Start buying USA products. I've never felt that way in my life until now. And it's just do it. You know, there's companies, Joe Bucher and them spit, I don't even want to guess how much money they built that facility for.
To build that, yes, and state-of-the-art facility.
Employing United States workers, making the baits in the USA and all that stuff. And so, you know, get you a flag and march it around your house and get real proud here. Cue the Lee Greenwood, everybody. So,
yes,
but,
sir.
You know, it's just the way it is. But we're done with the weirdness, maybe. I'm sure. Actually, I already read the first question. Here's the first question. Me and Chez are just, and to warn you guys, if it keeps getting weird, you can count on one thing. We're going to do a bunch of extra podcasts to brighten up your day so you can think about musky fishing while you're sitting at home doing whatever
We've
you're
got
doing.
To. We've just got to.
If nothing else, we'll just get on here and ramble.
So, yeah.
But all right. The first one up is from Rich. This is a question I've had as well, Rich, so let's roll with it. The border between the U.S. and Canada was closed this week to non-essential travel. If for some reason it remains closed this summer, what are your plans for musky fishing? Where will you go on trips? Any recommendations are appreciated. Before you say anything, I'm going to say something real quick. Again, I was saying about the industry, I'll tell you right now, if you have trips booked with lodges in Canada right now, don't go canceling just yet. Don't. We're not to that point yet. Wait till, I don't know when to tell. I don't blame me, but give it a minute. If you're going to go fish that thing in June, be smart about it. Don't call them up freaking out. I've not talked to them, but I'm sure these lodge owners are freaking out.
Just well, everybody chill. Is, but I agree, man. June and July, we got a long ways to go. I mean, in my head, let's just get to March 30th, which is like,
yeah.
That's the world of teaching for a lot of schools. We're just waiting till like the beginning of April to see what happens.
Right.
It's like, but you're like, you know, it's like, don't yet. Yeah, keep your plans for the summer. At least
chill.
For our sake.
Chill. And if you can't go to Canada, I'm going with Chaz Martin on Musky Guide Service.
Getting me fired up because look, man, like, so Steven, this is my, you know, and Joe and I have talked about this. I've been filming with Joe for a long time now.
Absolutely.
And we've done some every year I look forward to, and I'm sure you do as well, obviously, our trips to Canada are very, very special. And this was the first year that I myself was going to do a little Musky Mastery Canadian edition.
Mm-hmm.
And if that doesn't work, hey, man, I'm not shedding tears. I am so fired up to dial in my water. So I guess to answer the question for Rich, what are you going to do if the Canadian borders are closed? Because I was kind of planning an extra trip myself, and it's like, dude, I am so fired up to go explore new water in the state of Wisconsin around my neck of the woods in Eagle River. Let me tell you, right? Like last season, 2019 was one of the best seasons I've had on the books in a long time for a variety of in a lot of different categories. But one of the biggest reasons it was was because I got out of my comfort zone. I fished new water within a very reasonable distance of my house, and we scored big. And we weren't crossing borders. We weren't going anywhere. We just fished new water, and we did our research, and it was awesome. And I got that bug again, man. Yeah. And it's like, so yeah. So if the Canadian border's closed, get creative in your home water. I got to say
absolutely.
One more.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, preach on, brother. Preach on.
Yes. How about, and I call him this graciously because he's one of our most, you know, big fish, successful musky hunters in the state of Wisconsin, the old Tom Gelb, old faithful from Harley Davidson.
Yeah.
You know, he changed his whole philosophy. Read his book, Musky Strategy. You know, it's like just look in your backyard and change the way you approach your fishing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you will start seeing different results.
Man,
you know, it's like you challenge yourself in different ways if that's the way this whole thing plays out.
You know, and that, you know, you're nailing it right there on what you should be doing anyway. You know, and maybe that's do that regardless. And the one thing I'll say is everybody wants something to look forward to. So if it gets crummier, which I don't think it will. But if it gets crummier, find something else to focus on and book that trip in Wisconsin or fish your own backyard.
Let's just put this out there, right? Like outside of obviously like traveling and like crossing borders, like the actual sport of musky fishing is kind of funny. It's like probably one of the safest things you can go and do.
No joke.
I mean, literally, like it, as long as the person you're fishing with is like doesn't have coronavirus. Like,
right.
I mean, you couldn't put yourself in like a safer place. Like, so go fish.
Go fish. Absolutely. That will, like, we'll have to do something where we're in hazmat suits. What do you think?
Right.
That'd be sort of wicked, actually. All right.
By the way, I can't wait to see the thumbnail for this podcast.
Oh, it's just so goofy. Anyway, next up is from Jim. Jim asks, if you caught a world record, what would you do? And what bodies of water do you think? God. Oh, buddy. I already know, Jim. I can tell you that much.
All right, Steven, I want to hear, because this is one of the best. This is such a classic question. Well, I didn't even get to the end of it. It's like,
he says, what would you do if you cut a world record, and what bodies of water do you think could give one up? You go for it, man.
Well, now, see, I don't want to go on the boy, because I'd club that son of a gun.
No, I'm kidding.
Well, okay, so I'm glad you just went out there and said it.
That's the question. Do you kill it? That's,
I mean,
what
a real world
to.
Record. So we're talking. I mean, let's just throw a number out there. I'm going to say 70 pounds.
Nah.
Just to be.
Now, that's we got to clarify. Are we talking the modern day musky world record, that 58x58 from the UP? Or are we talking Louis Spray? Questionable. I don't have a horse in that race, so I don't know if it's quite. It's confusing crap. So what? You clarify. What are we going for?
I guess if I've got a muskie that I like, let's say we run some basic calculations. You take your length and girth, and you're sitting there saying, "Oh my God, this thing is over, legitimately over 60 pounds."
Right.
And let's say this comes from the Three Lakes chain, which is like my dream of all dreams. Oh my God, I couldn't imagine how dark and nasty that fish is going to look and how just old. But I guess, I thought about this, man. I mean, we've just talked about, I'm probably going to have to keep the fish. I mean, as much as I am a catch and release nut, I mean, a fish like that, you just don't know how many. I mean, even that fight in and of itself, I don't know if that's even going to kill the thing or not. Or, I mean, I'll probably get some hate for saying that. But, I mean, you get with something that big. I mean, oh, my God. I mean, we're not talking 50 pounds. We're talking like
a Leviathan.
60 plus. Yeah, something outrageous.
That's like one of these things, because I actually talked about my boat partner, Kevin. If I know you listen, hey, Kevin and me are going to be fishing on Eagle this year a bunch. And we talked about, like, what would you do? Just sort of, you know, having some beers and shooting the bull about this whole thing. And the one thing is, like, if you're in Canada, you better make sure you don't have the conservation license, which everyone buys. Which would make it an illegal fish. So that's one thing I thought of, but it's like one of those deals is if you didn't take the fish in, then it's a fish story, and no one would ever believe you. Now, 90% of, well, the thing is this, I have a unique perspective some degree. You don't want to. You know, I have
you don't want to have that perspective.
You know, I've got the state record here in Tennessee as of, you know, what, and who cares? But what happened is that fish, there, it was dying no matter what. It was one of those deals, and you sit here and go, ugh, you know, and even if that, it was not savable. And in retrospect, I should have just sunk the thing and moved on with my life, because it does nothing for you. But, you know, that's what you're saying.
I don't mean to laugh either. No, it's true. We've talked about it. There's some of the side of our sport that's not so pretty.
No,
sometimes.
And I'm being as open and honest with listeners as possible.
Yeah.
You know, that's just a fact. And it's just like, who cares? But, dude, the thing is, this is like that world record fish. How could you not?
Well, like, here's what I would do. So I've gone through the scenario. I mean, if I get this thing in the net, I am taking my nautical ropes and I'm tying like two of them, you know, right. through underneath the, you know, the gill plate. And I'm tying that thing to the boat. And I'm going to go, the thing's not going to fit in my old, my Ranger live well's 48 inches corner to corner. So it ain't going to fit in there. Maybe it's 50 corner to corner, I think.
Yeah.
And one of my, and this has been a story that the one and only Joe Bucher has told me many times. I just love these old stories, you know.
Oh, yeah.
We're driving to go film and I start picking his brain about good old days and stuff. And one thing that I've always wanted to do is catch a giant muskie. We'll call it the world record here for Jim's question, and go get the boat stuck somewhere at some launch and have everybody come and help me and find me and be like, what the hell's in your boat, Chaz?
Right.
Oh, well, I forgot to mention. Yeah. We, you know, I would love
just have it in there. Yeah.
Yeah. Have it in there. Be like, help me get this thing out. And by the way, I got a world record. Yeah, just
carrying that thing up the dock over here. Man, I'll tell you, I wouldn't blame a dude if he's like, yeah, no, I caught this thing. Who cares, man? You know, it's at the end of the day, it's just like, if it is a genuine world record, I think people would want to see it, you know?
Now, just let me ask you, because I think you told me this once, and I'm just going to throw a question out. This is a question from Chaz.
Yeah.
Steven, what's the biggest muskie you have ever seen? I think you told me this once, but I want to hear it once more. What's the mean to take, like, truly the biggest one? And I think you told me the body of water before, so I won't say it if you want to say it. But
the biggest I've ever seen, biggest that I know that has been landed, right? This is a twofold answer. The biggest that is on the boat and in the net is 58, and I think that fish was over 50 pounds easily.
Wow.
That is a bump board fish in the early day of bump boards. I did not catch that fish, and I've seen that in person. That was on Eagle. And then the biggest fish I've ever seen is the one that grabbed that Northern this year. I think that's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
The deal was this, is my personal PB was about 60 days before that, which is very long, very big fish. So I had a good perspective. It was the only muskie that I've ever seen that I felt was in, we called it at the camp, we called it 50X because there was no guessing
what do you call that now? That's kind of a cool term. What do you call
50X? 50X? Meaning I know I didn't want to screw it. It's the podcast. I don't care. Whatever. You don't want to do it out. That fish was 63 to 64 inches long. Wow. Is what I would guess. Now, mind you, you're putting me in a weird spot because I'm trying to be honest in what I think I saw opposed to crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
I tell people when they come on the boat all the time is this. Like, if it's a 42 and I see it coming in, I'm always right on the money. Right? Like, oh, that's a 42. That's a 43. Before it even hits a net, we see them follow in. You do this all the time. You know,
you know
the lengths in the water.
You can guess them pretty darn close.
The reason it freaked us out is because this fish, I had no perception of how big that fish was. You know what I'm saying? Because it was so big in comparison to I'll even just say it. My personal best is 57 1/4 inches long. That's a freak. I'll probably never top that. I've not even published that fish. You've seen it.
Yeah.
Joe's seen it. I've got bump board pictures on it. And it's not something I've even talked about a lot, but that fish, I saw that in the water, and I know what it looked like. You know what I'm saying?
Dude, like, I know exactly what you're saying. It's an incredible feeling when something else eclipses that, and you just don't know.
Yeah, just in width and girth.
Because I think things get, and it's like anything in life when we're like accustomed to doing things mm-hmm. where we can judge and gauge things very, right. very, very accurately. But when things, I would say this, like, I've handled a number of fish myself and with Joe and mm-hmm. some special customers over the years. Yeah, 50 range, 52. I've seen some of Joe's monsters. But once they get that big, though,
it's hard to gauge
because they get wider. They get some mm-hmm. of them. They just get funky. They're weird. They're old.
I tell people all the time that like up to 51 is like the magic number for me. 51 to 52. Past that, we're guessing. And like I said, you put me on the spot. What's the biggest thing? I just sort of said 63, 64, which is just, listen, for listeners, I'm pulling that out of my ass. I'm just going off the best point of reference I have. Yeah.
No judgment on this podcast. Yeah. And, because we're having some fun. But I wanted to ask you, though, do you think that, and I this is probably putting you on the spot, man.
Yeah, go for it, Jim.
We're taking your question. But do you think a fish like that, what weight? I mean, we're talking length, 63, 64. You have any idea what something like that would like?
Oh God, I have no clue. But I'll tell you this, when I saw that fish, okay, so the scenario is this. I'm on Eagle. I'm on an unpressured section of Eagle. Eagle has given up monstrous fish. Everybody, absolutely. There's no debate.
Yeah. Everybody knows that.
What happened was dude was casting. I said, "Do you want this fish?" I hooked and I've got pictures. You've seen the pictures of this pike.
Mm-hmm.
I hooked mm-hmm. a 36 inch northern, reeling it in, doing the typical stuff, and I was just like going through the motions. That fish, it was not following my bait. It came up and grabbed the tail of that pike, and that's how we got a perspective on it and saw it there. So there's a lot of commotion and a lot of things going on. That was a good, like I said, it's like 35 inch 36 pike somewhere. I've got it against one of those Raleigh and Helen sticks, so it's a sizable pike. And so obviously adrenaline's going, there's a moment of shock, you know what I'm saying? Like there's a mm-hmm. lot of factors that go in. The one thing I'd say is this, I guide a lot of days a year of spending a limited amount of time in the water. So I get big eyes on a fish that big, but I know that it wasn't mid 50s. I know that. What got me is you're trying to go for like, if you're going weight, if I'm going girth, I really just don't have a great idea because it was like taking a mid 50s. And half of another mid 50s and jamming them together sideways. You know what I'm saying?
Like, can I say something real quick? For anybody out there, here's my official statement. For anybody out there who ever questions why we use, like there's a lot of different reasons, but anybody questions why things are so hardcore in the sport of muskie fishing, mm-hmm. it is because of this like deep down belief that any given day we step into a boat, you could tangle with something of unknown size. You just don't know. And that's one of the best things about this sport that drives me nuts. It doesn't matter what body of water I'm fishing. You just don't know. And you could have a moment like you're talking about where you're mm-hmm. seeing your eye to eye with something that like, you don't know how big it is. Like, how big is that fish? I have no idea. And you don't want to be out there with some crap components that are going to fail. When that moment comes, the last thing you want to be doing is pissing your pants because your stuff's going to fall apart.
Dude, and so you nailed it because, like, if you had 40-pound braid on, and that thing – that I get a real good look at that fish, by the way, too. And like I said, I mean, the worst-case scenario, that fish was 58 or 59. I know that. Beyond, I'll go to my grave knowing it was upper 50s minimally at worst, you know. But the thing is this, like, I watched that thing because you've seen the picture where it grabbed the tail and then it grabbed the belly of it too. And I've got mm-hmm, the bite mark mm-hmm. next to my hand, and the mouth of that thing is huge across and all this. I just watched it, and when I was holding the rod and it's got to hold that northern, I went, the thought that went through my head is that if I could get that in, I don't know what I'm going to do.
dude.
You know?
Oh my god. Like,
but we're sitting there.
Oh my god.
We're freaking. We had the way that thing got off too, by the way, was I touched it on the back of its tail with a net. We're trying to bring it in backwards. You couldn't bring it in head first.
Oh my god.
And it touched the, and it let go of that northern. But man, you got me on a tip of like crazy stuff I only tell like you and Joe and stuff. But that's the same thing as like I'm fully aware. I will the mathematical chance of ever seeing a fish that big about are zero. You know what I'm saying? Of getting in front of that thing.
Yeah, you just, you know, it is. It makes you wonder. I say that it's a depressing thought sometimes because I lost what was it now 2 years ago, a season ago, I think 18. I lost arguably what I thought was the biggest Wisconsin fish I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, ever laid eyes upon it was the biggest thing I've ever seen in Wisconsin. And, you know, I thought to myself, like, what are the chances I ever run into that fish again? But, you know, it's like, I don't know. You have to believe that it's possible. I mean, there's crazier things that have happened in this damn world.
I'll tell you, seeing that, I told a client this week before all the craziness broke out, he was asked, what's the biggest fish you've ever seen, whatever. And I actually told him, and it sort of struck me over since July when I saw that fish last July, that I try to not be an a-hole when people tell you that, because I know you go into like musky seminars and stuff like that. Guys say, like, I saw this or I saw that, and you always sort of take it with a heavy grain of salt. And then it sort of made me think some people have seen fish that big.
They have. And well, the thing is, because I always like when somebody like Joe, you know, tells you about, you know, he had the podcast, you know, initially months ago about talking about the biggest muskie he ever hooked. And it's like, you know, somebody like Joe, it's a day that he caught, I don't know what it was, a 57 or a 56 and 3/4 incher.
Yeah,
that,
he caught,
you know, an hour before. And he's like, this thing is just like, you know, just, you know, inconceivably bigger. And it's right. Like, you know, but it does add some validity when you know somebody has handled so many big fish.
Oh, yeah. You
know? It's and I got to just say one more. I know we're really going along
with
this question, but just because this makes me grin thinking about this story. The biggest muskie I've seen, I got to just tell real. I'll do a fast version of this.
I want to hear it.
Is the morning that I caught my personal best.
Really?
And my PB was measured with Joe, and right. Joe had, I mean, he measured it with me, and Joe is
now,
right on
question.
The money.
Does Joe Booker know how to accurately measure a muskie? Can we trust this guy?
Yeah. So you know what? I'll tell the actual story and how he measured my muskie. So my biggest muskie is 54.
Right.
And that's the one, my big one that I caught in July, the big thick fish on the glide rater. And Joe, when he looked at that fish, he goes, that's a 40 pounder, dude. It's on the video.
Undoubtedly.
And I'm like, you know, and I'm in my zone and everything. And anyway, we put that fish just straight up. I know it's not, we shouldn't have done it. And I'm probably not supposed to say this, but we just put that fish right on the floor and we took a tape measure and we went just from nose to the pinch.
Yeah.
And that was how we measured that. We put her right back in the water and she swam off just fine.
Jeez.
So shouldn't have done it, but it was big fish and that was about at 4:30 p.m. It was right on the moon. And previous to that, way earlier in the morning, it was a the day after a big thunderstorm on Lake of the Woods. We wake up, it's cold, you know, and we got to our first spa, it's a big rock reef. And I'll never forget, man, I had this fish come in. It was total of three times. And the first time it came in, it's one of those, you know, it's sunny out. It's not a cloud in the sky. It's 10:30 in the morning. And, you know, when the sun's up at that angle and it's kind of dead calm. I just remember being out there and I remember seeing this muskie start. I'm like, Joe, got one coming, man. And I'm like, you know, you got like, you know, ice in your veins. Everything's doing what it's supposed to be doing. The body is reacting. And I'm just dead sticking this thing. And I'm just looking at it.
Yeah.
And it's looking at me and its mouth is doing those little flutters. It's opening and it's just sitting like, I'm like, oh my God. And Joe turns and you always know when Joe turns, he goes,
right,
dude, that's a really big fish, man.
If it's impresses him. Yeah.
Yeah. When anything impresses Joe, you're like, ah, it's gotta be pretty damn big, man.
Yeah.
And the thing was, it was bigger by, I mean, I don't know what, but it was distinctly larger. And I don't know. It was bigger than 2 inches longer than the fish I caught later that day.
Right.
But I remember telling Joe, I'm like, dude, that one I saw this morning, I mean, it came up to the boat and it was just, oh gosh. But it reminded me is the only reason I wanted to tell that story is because it made me think it's a tackle breaker. I looked at the thing. I'm like, I just was thinking, what happens? You bite? I set the hook. Holy smokes.
You know,
I didn't want to. What happens?
Yeah. What do you do? What are we going to do? You know, and well, obviously we're going to do more podcasts this week because I love this tip. I got to tell another one because it's like the same thing of like, you know, Bill Crane. A lot of people have thrown crane baits over the years. Bill Crane was a fishing partner of my dad's and grandfather's for years. Mm-hmm. And the story on that, you know, Bill Crane has caught a blue billion muskies. And they were on a place on Eagle. And dad, I think it was, I could be wrong, but I think it was the same trip that Bill caught his first 50. Because he was sort of, and that makes sense for those crane baits. If you wonder why they have like smaller hooks on them, that guy, what for all accounts was more about numbers than anything else, which, you know, is fine. That's great. Mm-hmm. He's not chasing big fish. And that was the same thing there on Eagle. And he just said, I don't even know. He had that fish come in on a crane bait and he just went, I have no concept of how big that fish was, you know, of seeing 50s on Eagle and stuff like that, which it happens, you know, it's crazy. And I think, man, that's an interesting thing that what you're saying. And I think it's so true is, on occasion, you'll just see one that just dwarfs everything that you had a concept of, you know?
And yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know.
One of my favorite stories, and this is terrible, Jim, who sent this question in. So take two guys who are literally stranded during coronavirus and ask them about their biggest muskies.
Forget. The rest of your questions, we're going to get to them later this week. Chaz and me promise another podcast. But, yes, keep on big fish. Preach on. Yeah.
The one thing it reminds me of, because you're talking Eagle, and it's a story I'll never forget the first time he told me, was Steve Herbick, who mm-hmm. by the way, Steve, our prayers going out to you, man, with your recovery.
Absolutely.
Everybody in the muskie community is rallying, and I love the photo updates. But, you know, he told us a story about the biggest fish he ever saw on Eagle, and it's like, I mean, I don't know. I'm just getting – my mind is all
– Well, we're dreaming a big fish. Man, that's the thing, though, is you know, he actually asked about what could give up a world record. So let's stay on big fish because this is fun.
Yeah.
Okay. World record, and we're talking like – we already sort of said we're going for that 60-pound, like, crazy class, whatever.
Yep,
You can litigate what the world – I don't give a rat's, to be honest with you, because it's not about big fish all the time. But let's just go with 60 pounds. You got to hit 60 pounds or whatever.
Yep. 60
okay.
pounds?
Eagle?
Boy, so I think, yeah, Eagle for sure has got to be a top runner.
Locksoul,
I mean,
probably
to.
In front of – probably I would put Locksoul above Eagle, in my opinion.
What do you think of something goofy like this, man? Like just some rogue, just giant swimming out in Lake Superior, you know, just something.
Course, I think that like if we're going to crawl down that rabbit hole, that's where like the biggest, like it has to be there. And that's like the mystique or the sexy part of musky fishing is just like you have to, if you can't go to bed at night and just go, what if I trolled Lake Superior for 40 years straight?
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, like, what if I abandoned my family and I moved to Locksoul and I fished through the ice every day? You know.
Wait, so let me throw this one out there. Yeah. So I mean, you know, Lake of the Woods, no doubt, and because you know, guys have caught them in the last decade. I mean, 50 pounders out of Lake of the Woods, that's certainly
doable.
They exist. And do 60s exist out there? I gotta believe they do. I mean, on these Canadian waters, I mean, God, I mean, they're just so expansive. What,
did you ever see? I never saw them. Did you see the jaws that Doug found when he was filming with Joe?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
I've never seen them. I heard they're just like the biggest musky head you could ever imagine kind of deal.
Yeah, right? And but here, I wanted to throw this one out to you. What do you think? Now, this one I is maybe up for debate. You know, St. Lawrence Seaway has produced 60-inch muskies.
Right.
But in some of them, I think there was a modern day world record contender at one point, probably 10 years ago or so, out of the St. Lawrence. I mean, there's a body of water that's got a reputation, a lot of muskies over 50.
You can't. Has there been a confirmed 60? Like 100% on a bump board? Like people are going to debate it until they're blue in the face.
There is a guy that I used to follow, and I know he still guides out there in the St. Lawrence. And his
Mike
name,
Lazarus?
No, well, it's Sign Man Charters. Who's
okay.
Sign Man Charters?
I don't know.
I should know.
I'll Google it.
Yeah, because he had a photo of a. I mean, I just growing up, I was nuts and used to look at all this stuff. And I don't know who that is, but he's been guiding out there for a long time. I know he's got a picture of a 60 on there.
1000 Island Sign Man Charters. Let's see. The joys of the internet. I'm sure everybody is just tearing it up online, as you should. Mm-hmm. Setting it all. Let's see. I mean, there's some big fish, son. I'll tell you that much.
If you're setting,
we don't know this guy, but I'll say this. If you're setting around and you're bored, go just look. Okay, here we go. Captain Rich Clark, for the last 30 years, has been recognized internationally as a world-class muskie hunter. Every year, he has consistently guided clients to some of the largest muskies in the world. As a matter of fact, in the 2013 May issue of M Fisherman, Captain Rich is credited for guiding Dan Polnack to a 60-pound, 60 by 29.
So there was the fish, because this guy was on my radar. Captain, what is his name?
Captain Rich Clark. So they
Rich Clark. And he looks like a very friendly guy. A little shout out to Rich Clark.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know him. We're trolling the internet like anybody else.
Yeah, but I saw that photo, man, years ago.
Yeah,
he's, when was it, 2013?
It says 2013. He said 60 plus pound, 60 inches by 29.5. So a 60 inch long fish, 29.5 girth. Both
that's
of these
ridiculous.
Lady Aaron Pills. Let me see. Why does that say that? There's like some weird link under that says Lady Era Pills. Hold on, let me see if it's a link to the picture. This podcast is now surfing the internet with Chaz Martin and Stephen Ball.
This is dangerous.
Okay, for some reason, see this, like there's a link under that takes me to Canadian Pharmacy. Okay, so does that, I don't know what's up with that. Check your links on your website. But this is on the guide site, Sign Man Charter. So that is the claim as a 60-pound, 60 by 29.5.
So is it possible? Yeah, probably.
I mean, these are some brick. Trust me, on the site here, these are some gone.
Oh, yeah, he's got some big dogs down there for sure. But,
so obviously, we cannot debate St. Lawrence could do it. Okay, so we got Eagle. We got St. Lawrence.
Okay, so let me ask you this. I'm just going to throw a zinger at you now, man.
Yeah.
What do you think about Tennessee or Wisconsin or some of our Midwest states contending? Is there a shot in the dark here for our Midwest states? And you know, what do you think?
Well, Tennessee has the world record for smallmouth and the world record for walleye. So we have the heaviest walleye ever caught and the heaviest smallmouth. Is it possible? Yes. I mean, I think anything's possible.
Let me just make this clear for the listener out there. So you're saying Tennessee has the heaviest walleye to date ever caught.
World record walleye. It's called the Mayberry Harper fish. Let's make see. Okay, the largest walleye ever taken weighed 25 pounds and caught in 1960 on Old Hickory Lake in Tennessee, according to the International Game and Fish Association.
So that is the biggest walleye on record.
Yep, and we have the world record smallmouth. Let's look.
You know what? As you're Googling around there, you know, boy, I would love to see a mount of that fish.
Holy that world record walleye is like, it looks like a muskie.
Hopefully that one didn't burn up in a
no, it's legit. Okay, and I'm right. 11-pound, 15-ounce smallmouth caught on Del Hollow Reservoir in Tennessee.
Wow.
I mean, is it possible? Yes. We had the previous world record for striper at 63 pounds as well. So,
jeez, nobody should go fish in Tennessee.
Never. But, you know, I mean, that's the thing. Never say never. Is it possible? Yes. Is it probable? Probably not. You know?
But yeah.
I think honestly, and I'm no like expert on lifespan on these things, and there's not enough empirical data. We can all agree on that. Like there's not enough empirical data on lifespan. I would think for a fish to reach those proportions, I think that the fact that we never have ice over and they like don't go into they don't have long, long periods of being solvent and chilling out and all that stuff. You know, because under the ice, and I'm pontificating here, but bear with me. See if my logic checks.
You're getting me. I'm thinking of something I want to throw in too. But
right.
I'm
think if my logic checks out here, Jess. Is the temperatures are warmer here, where our water's not crazy hot like people assume it is, but we don't get ice, so they never are stuck down there under like really cold stuff, which is basically keeping them in a I'm not trying to sound goofy, but like it slows them down, keeps them in a more suspended state, increase their lifespan. That would be my thought. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm mm-hmm. saying? And all records are freaks and all big fish are freaks, but you go, on average, like how long does a fish have to live to reach those
proportions?
Now, let me
throw something totally different at you now. Listen to this. So here's my analogy. Okay, 8-foot human beings. Okay.
Uh-huh.
These are people that walk our planet that have been like, they're like 9 feet tall. Okay. And they have a genetic, I would just say, you know,
expression.
Just a little different. Yeah. Different genetic expression than we do. It's abnormal. And that they grow to that height very quickly in life.
Yeah.
And I just want to give this idea a twist out there that perhaps, and here's my other thought here. So let's just take, for example, these wonderful people that are, you know, 8.5, 9 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
Do they live a normal life?
Not at
all. Absolutely not. Not at all. They don't go to the same stores as we do. They don't go grocery shopping. They don't fit into cars, trains, planes. Mm-hmm. They don't, you know, I hope that they live wonderful, happy lives, but they don't live like we do. And they also do it in a very short amount of time. And they typically, as a science teacher, I'm just saying, right. Like generally speaking, folks that, you know, get that big, they don't have very long lives. And so I'm saying maybe in the musky world, as I've often tried to equate these ideas, is it possible that the world record or something of that magnitude could get to that size because of a genetic, you know,
absolutely,
formality,
yes,
and get there quickly and live a weird life because they're just different.
Well, now you're talking, you know, if we take in consideration genetics, that really, you know, that's why I think, you know, for down where I'm at and stuff like that, it would make it funky as far as the genes, you know what I'm saying? But you're right, because I use it all the time. If like I use Yao Ming, used to be the center for the Houston Rockets, as an example about the same thing you're saying. I say, and I'm not trying to make it weird or anything like that, but on average, Chinese people are typically shorter, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you go, oh, and then we have a 7.5-foot tall dude. And
exactly,
it's a matter of genetic expression and just like, yeah, it could be there, but.
Well, and I want to go one other thing, and I think that so you could have this, and so I don't want to get too far down the science hole here, but you also have to have, and this would just skew things back to our Canadian and our really, we'll just call it our mega systems, our super systems, because the big fishbowl thing is I really believe that
yes.
is you have to have the environment that can trigger the expression of that particular gene, whatever you know, is there to produce something of that, because it's not normal, right? Like most monkeys do not reach that size.
Can I tell you? And you said that about the expression, because sometimes in the science end of things, it can be almost nature or nurture, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So even environmental things will trigger genetic expression, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The two Tennessee records, the walleye, the world record walleye, and the world record smallmouth, from what I've read and from what I've understood, came in the period shortly thereafter they flooded the reservoirs. And so these fish were introduced into a, in comparison to the fish that were already there, these fish that were born in these new reservoirs had so much more available to them. So their environment expanded fivefold. The amount of nutrients introduced in this waterway expanded an untold amount. It opened up entire hillsides as cover and forage. And you just go, and that's how that happened. That's why it's just like, so they weren't stocking those fish. They're native fish that just went hog wild because this whole thing opened up. So that, I mean, that's just a,
we could just talk all kinds of ideas here. Cause I don't know. Yeah. It's like, it makes you think. It doesn't necessarily have to be a fish of that magnitude. It doesn't necessarily have to mean that it's going to be super old. I think
but you look at like the big fish that were coming on Mille Lacs.
Yeah.
Okay, so like I've heard, and correct me if I'm wrong, but that it's slowed a little bit, right? That it's not what it once was, but like
no.
out of nowhere, it's just like boom, gondo fish, and it's like they're the first ones there once they're really like hammering some stocking, right? Correct me if I'm wrong, that was a stocked lake, right? And the same thing, like you look at Green Bay. Green Bay's a stock fishery. I don't know for you northern folks. I'm trying my best here not to misspeak, but I'm all the way down in Tennessee. But Green Bay, there are native muskies in Green Bay, correct, Jess?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
But the fish that are primarily being caught are stock fish, from what I understand.
So I have heard. Yes.
For my thought process would be, will you see a diminishing size class as those fish continue to be in that environment? You know what I'm saying? Are we seeing the fruits of that introduction of a new environment right there? So it's like, here's these big freak fish, mid-50s, rah, monsters, because they have new, you know, there's not as many of them, and it's a new environment.
I think you are right, because I do think everything tends to be pretty cyclical. Uh-huh. I mean, I do think you're going to have that natural ebb and flow with all of this stuff. You're going to have highs, and then it's going to dip down, and it's going to, you know,
there's a bell curve in stocking on everything. Like like that 20-year peak they're talking about. There's a lake here in Tennessee called Chickamauga, which is stocked with Florida bass. And, you know, they're sort of starting to get in that curve where they're introduced the same amount of fish, but things are starting to slide off a little bit, getting generally slightly smaller because there's less forage and stuff. But that's why we'll take it back to where we're at. That's why I think it's got to be one of those mega Canadian waterways or one of the Great Lakes.
And you can have those fish that are interbreeding with, and you start mixing those genes, your gene pool changes too over time, and it can start to favor different things, and it changes over time, no doubt about it. So I don't know, it's cool stuff. I mean, look at one question got us, I don't know how long
pretty much that whole podcast, we're just staying on this tip. So
it's fascinating stuff.
Let's just like finish up. We got one question. It's an hour long question. I love it. So let's talk about other bodies of water that could be. So we got Eagle. We agree on that. We both agree on Lake of the Woods. We both agree on Lock Soul. St. Lawrence, without a doubt. So what is like, what Georgian Bay? Do you think Green Bay could
boy,
do?
See, that's
Georgian like
Bay,
some
Green
freaks.
Bay. I mean, those are like, I mean, you're two. Who is the boy? There's one out of Georgian Bay, a very classic, it was a world record at one point. I'll never forget the photo because the guy's wearing a yellow rain jacket in it. Jeez Louise. How the heck?
Oh,
was
I know
that?
What you're talking about. He's wearing it's a younger dude. He's got sort of curly brown hair.
Yeah, his name's like, I don't want to even say the name because I'm not right.
It wrong.
But
he's wearing
it's
the yellow,
really,
like a Gordon's Fisherman jacket, kind of like.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
that's
the fish
a stud.
Is just massive, and I believe that fish still exists. As I was kind of a geek, and again, used to do a lot of research on this stuff. And that fish was frozen.
Really?
That fish, I believe, is still. If you Google that Georgian Bay fish, you can see photos of it online in the freezer. And now there is some controversy about that fish. Now, of course, like all these big ones of the old days, even though that one's not too old, that was like in the '80s, I think.
Yeah.
But that fish that you take out of the freezer is not the same length as the one that they weighed. And there is some,
that's why it's so weird.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I imagine being in the freezer for 20 years, I'm assuming things change. And obviously there's a lot of stretching that goes on when you're holding, you know, a 60 pound plus muskie up, you know, by its head, now, you know, things just,
you just
stretch.
Sort of, it, for some reason, it popped in my head though. Some like the stories that I've heard from like the Ojibwe Indians up on Eagle, you know, cause I know all those.
Yeah.
And there are stories of, you know, it's just, we're talking fishing stories at this point, people don't, you know. we're not looking for, but you know, the biggest I've ever heard of from, and mind you, whenever I'm not going to go into Indians and muskies, I don't care about all that garbage, but you know, these people are sustenance fishing or beaver hunting or beaver trapping. And there's one place where they've told me, oh yeah, back in the day when we were in there getting beaver traps, we would see them that we thought were, you know, well above the 60 inch mark, which, you know, what do they know? But I'm sitting here going, these people have been seeing them for generations and stuff, you know, and I've heard horror stories of gaffings and of shootings and stuff like that. But, you know, they used to claim that they had, shot one in the shallows that was well above that 60 pound mark, right. Which, you know, a whole other can of worms. You're thinking about it, which leads to, you're a science teacher. Some of this stuff too, I think, is going to be dependent on the quality of water and the pollution levels and stuff like that too.
That, yeah, well, you know, that's very interesting too. Even I won't go down completely.
Well, that's
that
a whole
road,
5 hour. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because it's interesting. You know, some of the most pristine waters. I've done some research in my area, Wisconsin, and like they have extremely, you know, high mercury levels, even in the most pristine remote lakes, because of, you know, wind and coal-based power plants and stuff. And it's like, you have no idea what's in your waters unless you start digging in a little bit. It's like, whoa.
Son, you know? I'll tell you, the other day I had a conniption fit. And number one, if you ever come on my boat and you throw trash off of, keep your trash in the boat. Always turn the boat around. Keep it clean. We're out here taking this stuff. But I about had a stroke the other day. I'm throwing a DR and I'm throwing up on this edge and I hook into something. I go, man, that's, you know, just a snag from all get out. It's just goofed up. Can't move. Thinking, you know, hoping it's a tree branch. You know, you drag a branch in or whatever. Didn't want to blow the spot.
Yeah.
I go over there and it's a car battery that somebody had been using as an anchor. There's a big piece of rope tied to a car battery.
You have got to be kidding me.
And I just went, well, and they wonder why the fishing's down in some places, you know? So,
oh my God.
That was my.
All right, Steven, I gotta ask you. So let's just, let's, can we just, because you're going down now.
We're
now
just,
you're going
into
the strange
crazy.
Stories
yeah.
now. Now you're going into the strange stories, man.
Oh,
I was thinking of a couple strange ones, man. Yeah. What were you thinking? Because that was initially what I was thinking for this podcast. You're like, man, the strange.
It's strange and days, baby. It's strange out there.
Yeah.
Man,
and
if you're
what's like one of your most
weird ones?
Strange stories. Yeah.
The fish that blew past a dancing raider and hit the side of the boat. I was throwing a DR. I do that funky retrieve, whatever, with a DR, which the dancing raider is one of my favorite walk the dogs, period. And I do it fast. And I had this fish hot. And I was like, man, he's ready. He's ready. You know, swarping. You know what I'm talking about. That backs out of water.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's sort of like in that video where you said to Tyler, that fish is toast. You know, there is no doubt. In my
get
mind,
get the camera ready, man.
Yeah, get the, forget it. This thing's, he's good as caught. Come in. He hasn't hit yet. And so I will just, on top waters, he was hot. So I was just going to try to turn him and just take him around with the rod. And this fish goes, I turn it and he's so hot. He goes past that and just clunks into the side of my boat. Just nose Jeez. First, clunk. And he stays there and sort of just warbles around. I mean, he just rocketed inside up, stunned. And we were trying to get the net. I said, net him, net
him. You know? That is hilarious.
I've never seen, I don't know why he didn't hit. I mean, he was just hotter than a pistol. And I guess where he was watching, because, you know, I went to turn that bait real fast, real tight to the boat. And I think he was watching the bait and just went, bunk. And hit it. That's a weird one I got. What do you got?
That's weird, man. I was just thinking one of the weirdest things. This is another rabbit hole, man, but this is not a musky story. It's actually a smallmouth bass guiding story years ago. And ladies and gentlemen, always respect Mother Nature. And we've all learned the hard way, you know, like just being like, I can't believe I escaped that. You know,
right.
Like, holy shit, like that was dumb.
Oh yeah.
But this one, I wouldn't put it into that category, but this is the only time I've seen this that I can recall in my guiding days. This was in any of my fishing days. So I'm out there with a couple of guys. I remember there was a guy and his son were out smallmouth fishing, and we had a rain delay. And we ended up going in and, you know, getting breakfast, you know, because I usually don't do that when I'm, you know, usually I'm already eating and we're going out to fish.
Right.
And so anyway, we had a rain delay. We're going to eat at Lafe's in Eagle River there. And we were like, all right, well, it looks like things have cleared up. Let's go out and fish. So we launched the boat and we're out fishing in front of an island. And we're catching a couple smallies. It's kind of like, you know, the momentum's picking up. It's like that post-rainstorm bite when things are still pretty hot, you know, and it was – nobody was out there, you know, because it was just downpour. And the rain had stopped. It was real humid. And I'm sitting there. I'm working from the back. And this guy, I don't remember what his name was, but he goes, hey, Chaz, I can't feel my jig. And I'm like, what do you mean? Just reel that line in a little bit more. He's like, I am. I can't feel the jig, man.
Right.
And I look, and I'm just, I'll never forget looking at this guy, and his monofilament is looped up into the air like a freaking rainbow. And I'm looking at him, and he looks at me. I'm like, holy shit, dude, reel it in right away. We gotta go. And he's like cranking. He's cranking, Steve. I'm not exaggerating. He's cranking his line out of the sky.
There's
and
so I'm much like, static.
Holy shit, man. Yeah. And I'm telling you, he gets that thing in. I turn the motor on and it's like boom, boom, boom. I mean, lightning and I'm just zipping across the lake. We're not close to any
remote,
you know, state-owned island. And I'm like shit in my pants, man. I'm like, oh my God. And there wasn't, it's like, I wanted to put this because I feel like a dummy, like people would be like, oh, you should have not gone out. Well, there wasn't any lightning. There's nothing out there. Right. It's like, it's completely normal looking. And all of a sudden I'm like, whoa. That's just, I've never seen that again. I don't know. Have you ever seen anything like that?
I've not seen it float up. I call it lightsabering in Canada. Like, have you ever cast it? It goes, vroom. Like, you know, right before a storm, we did it one time. I was a kid, and I thought it was so cool. I was probably like 12 or 13. And I remember casting, I was like, vroom. You know, the rods made a sound. There was so much static.
Oh, that's weird.
And man. I remember, you know, turn around, it's this like hair on your arm standing up. And you we might want to get out of here. So that's a pretty good indicator that there's the air is way too prime for a lightning strike. But, man, you said that.
Oh,
talk about
God.
Just dumb stuff. I had, and it was just a wicked day anyway. Right. And just a bad, it wasn't thunder. It was thunderstorming, but it's not like, I mean, down here, if it's raining, you're hearing thunder, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's,
mm-hmm.
And we're out in just some big open water. I would say it's chopping 2.5 feet, something like that, as far as just a weird deal. And there's nothing close to us. There's no dock. There's nothing. And we're out there fishing. It's pouring. I mean, just beating with the rain. And as far as weird stuff, I'm sitting there, I'm watching, I see something coming at us. Right. And I'm just like, casting, and it just keeps coming and coming, and you can see it through the rain in the distance, and here it is just pouring buckets, and then we finally see this guy waving his arms in a square back canoe out over 60 feet of water in a pouring rainstorm with a dead engine and three kids in the boat and no life vest.
My gosh.
And you said that about that rainstorm, for some reason that popped in my head. I was sitting here going, and I asked the guy, I said, what on earth are you thinking? They got no bilge pump.
Oh, my God.
They have no rain.
Yeah.
And I asked the guy, I said, well, which kid were you going to save? You can't swim. You can't swim with all of them, you know? But I guess that's the respect Mother Nature thing, like you're saying. That's what popped in my head.
Oh, right. It's like each year you go in this business, it's like, man, I would rather fish another day than try to, you know.
Well, bro, we sort of got way off topic, but
we did.
Jim threw
the zinger at us.
He threw the zinger. That's Pandora's box. Trust me, everybody else, Andy, Corey, Jimmy, Justin B, Wally, John, and I'm just going down the list of everybody else that's in question. Me and Chaz,
we'll get another one out there.
But
yes, we got time.
we got nothing but time, baby. Nothing but time. But man, it feels good to just talk about this stuff. I'll tell you, everybody out there, take care of one another. Don't be jerks. Don't hoard stuff. Check on your neighbor. Check on your family. Okay.
Absolutely.
Don't. This is not the time to be a jerk. And I'm not a bleeding heart. I'm a capitalist, cutthroat sack of crap at most days. But you know. Just be, as Bill and Ted would say, righteous to one another. So,
I like that.
I think
man.
It was. Was that? Like well, maybe it is. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's not Bill and Ted, but not. Just don't be a dick, guy.
Well, we just don't know what's going on until we get a better idea, because there's a lot of mixed information. The internet can be a dangerous place. You know,
it is,
and we just don't really know what we're up against. And I personally think that. It's a little bit blown. I'll just say lightly. It's kind of blown out of proportion a little bit, I think.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, though, sometimes it creeps in the back of my mind, Stephen. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to find out the wrong way being naive.
I think uncertainty is the scariest thing in life.
It is. It is. You know, you just don't know.
You don't.
You know, it's kind of like musky fishing. Though when you go out there, you don't know if you're going to catch the biggest fish that swims in that system.
Absolutely.
You just don't No.
All right, buddy. Well, thank you so much. Guys, we will talk to you real soon this week.
Steven, had a great time as always, man.
You got it, buddy. Be good.
Thanks.